Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world, welcome to the Dad Timeout Show Conversations. Each Conversations episode, we hope to be interviewing some of the authors, writers, comedians, experts, and personalities that we admire, as well as talk about regularly on the Dad Timeout Show and everything in between. But we can't really quite kick it off without a good old dad joke, so I have a very special guest joining me. What's your name, young lady?
Alola.
And what is your joke for us tonight?
What's a unicorn's favorite word to say?
What is a unicorn's favorite word to say? I do not know. What is it?
Nay!
Nay! Great setup. Thank you very much, young lady. Well, that's a perfect segue and kickoff to our guest. James Breakwell is a professional comedy writer and amateur father of four girls. He's best known for family humor Twitter account at Exploding Unicorn, which boasts more than a million followers. The account went viral in April 2016 and transformed James from a niche comedy writer into one of the most popular dads on social media. We'll be talking a lot about different things with James, including his beginnings and time as a writer, a comedy writer, what got him in there in the first place, creativity in general, creativity with his kids, what it's like being a published author, and most importantly and more importantly, fatherhood, parenthood, and all the funny stuff that comes with that. We're also going to be talking about his brand new book, How to Be a Man, Whatever That Means, Lessons in Modern Masculinity from a Questionable Source, which, by the way, is on June 1st, is the official release, but you can pre-order now. So coming up next on the Dad Timeout Show, James Breakwell, otherwise known as at Exploding Unicorn. All right, thank you.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled, dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Dad Timeout Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world, welcome to the Dad Timeout Show, The Conversations. We have our very first conversation today and tonight, and it's a very, very exciting guest. And sir, if it's okay with you, may I give you a proper announcer introduction?
I would love that. I love it even more that you called me sir. I now feel a million years old.
Oh, I bet I got you by a decade. All right, here we go. He's best known for his family humor Twitter account at Exploding Unicorn, which boasts more than a million followers. He's got a brand new book coming out called How to Be a Man, Whatever That Means, Lessons in Modern Masculinity from a Questionable Source. June 1st is when it comes out, but you can pre-order now. But we have him live. Please welcome James Breakwell.
Woo! that is a very overwhelming intro. I don't know how I'm going to live up to it, but I will definitely try.
James, first of all, thank you. Thank you for indulging me. I was on a corporate call once and I won't name the client, but it was a big box store client. And I introduced the president of this box store that way. And I got about 10 emails later that day from all the different employees on the Zoom wanting me to do their phone recordings and stuff. And I just thought it was kind of funny. So.
That's for the first danger right there. You never show that you're good at something. All of a sudden, everybody wants your help.
Oh, yeah. It's so true, man. It's so true. Well, James, there's a lot I want to touch on tonight or today. Mainly, you know, I want to talk about your new book and all your books as well. But I wanted to kind of dab into a couple wells, if that's okay with you. Because we're four dads and we're all kind of in the entertainment industry. And we have a lot of writers that follow us, a lot of comedy writers, a lot of creatives, you know, a lot of published authors that we listen to, a lot of experts out there. And then fatherhood and parenthood as well. So if we can cram all that in at 4.1 seconds per conversation, you know, hopefully we can do it. But you and I have been kind of trying to connect. First question I really want to ask is, how was your spring break?
It was actually pretty good. We did, we're not so locked down here in Indiana, so we were able to get out a little bit. And we went to an indoor water park. And, you know, I don't know if you've done those with your kids, but they're kind of wonderful. Because when you go to a hotel, they all they want to do is swim in the pool anyway. Like, you can go to this most amazing cultural experience, you know, on the other side of the country, and all your kids want to do is play in the hotel pool. So now we do our vacations where the whole point is just the pool, and that seems to work out best for us.
It's so true, isn't it? My spring break was right after yours, and we are out west, out in Northern California. So we do the Griswold thing. We literally pack the minivan to the point of if you open the wrong window at the wrong time, it will explode, you know, out onto the road. And then we hit the road, and we just went to the big wide open. We kind of did Grand Canyon and blah, blah, blah. But as you know, it's all about the pool. A pool or ice cream? Yeah. They complain the entire time, but if there's ice cream at the end of the rainbow or the end of the hike, and if there's a pool involved, kabam, you're done. So a water slide and a water park, it's brilliant, man.
You actually, so I just discovered the ice cream thing this time. So I worked out the water park pool thing last time. And this time I was like, you know what? We're going to throw ice cream on the end of everything. We had some good meal experiences, some bad meal experiences, but every single one ended with ice cream. And that's all the kids remember. It's like, man, I could have the perfect vacation without even leaving town. Just be like, all right, kids, we're going to have ice cream for every meal today. And they would talk about that for the rest of their lives.
It's so true. It's the little tricks, you know. We were literally at the Grand Canyon, and they were complaining. And I'm like, well, why? What? Okay, we're going to get ice cream. Oh, really? And then the gift stores, of course. Every gift store in the western half of the United States we've been to. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. And James, just because we have a lot of new people that will probably hear of you, in addition to your army, you have four girls, right?
Yes. I have four daughters, ages 10, 8, 6, and 5.
10, 8, 6, and 5. Okay, so we've got a 13, I better get this right, a 13, a 10, and a 6, who are all Zooming simultaneously. And ooh. I'm very happy that we are strictly doing audio right now, because I've had enough hiccups to last me a lifetime during this pandemic. Well, you know, it's a first-time conversation, but I'm a long-time follower, and I'm a huge fan. So first of all, thank you for being on the show. When I was in the NBA, which was kind of a travel and a grind. I was an announcer, and we had our first child, and I felt like I didn't want to be that dad, right? Like just always away and coming home. So I rolled the dice. My wife and I had a long conversation, and I left that world, and it was a wonderful world, and I still love hoops and all that came with it, but I wanted to be a dad and a stay-at-home dad, and I figured I could patch together the freelance stuff. Well, my first community of friends, because I didn't even know who to talk to. You're home with a baby all day, and you're like, what? My wife's just like, keep it alive, and I'll be home, you know, at the end of the day, take care of it. But I'd like to say I'm an early adopter, because I remember finding you on Twitter very long ago and watching you grow. And this might have even been pre-BuzzFeed, pre-Mike Spore article. Like, I think that I was in that mix. And I've watched you kind of climb up. So it's been really interesting. And then I know you told a story about Dad 2.0 and the newsletter and all that. But the funny thing is, the guy that connected us, Shannon Carpenter, saw him on a panel at 2.0. And for those of you who don't know, our listeners, Dad 2.0 is this magnificent conference that takes place annually. And hopefully more moving forward. But all these like-minded fathers that want to change the paradigm and the narrative, and the funny fathers and the bloggers and the movement fathers, they all get together, and moms do too, and trade it in and out. How did you get there, James? Let's just go wrap it back around to your beginning. And how did you get to your Twitter place? How did you get to your writer place? I know it kind of goes blog, Twitter explosion, you know, newsletter, et cetera, et cetera. But can you take us through, like, I know, and also you were from a huge family. So why don't I just kick it off there and let you just run with it for a minute?
Yes. So I'm the oldest of seven kids. My parents kept trying to recreate perfection and could never get it right. But my youngest sibling is 22 years younger than me. So we're a big spread out Catholic family. And I got the comedy writing bug early in high school, I was wasting some time at the end of the computer literacy class and started writing a fake book of the Bible and I emailed it to a few people and they liked it. And that was, it took like only a very tiny bit of affirmation to get me going.
In high school, yeah.
And I thought, you know what? I should totally base my life around this. I forget being an engineer. I want to be a comedy writer, but that's not really like a job you can go out and get. So I thought, okay, I'll get a journalism degree and be like the next Dave Barry. Went to college, got a journal. Well, actually, I majored in English, not journalism. And then got out and worked at a newspaper and hated it, quit within a year. It's like, okay, that didn't go so well. And then I just got a regular cubicle job. I was like, okay, I'm going to do my writing on the side. So I started up a blog. I'd been comedy writing on the side all along. I used to write for the school newspaper. And I started this blog up, explodingunicorn.com, based on the image from that fake book of the Bible I wrote. There was a passage about unicorns being filled with hydrogen and that they exploded. And that's where we get the saying, it exploded like a unicorn. So I started this blog, wrote for it for a decade, put out like 400,000 words on there. It's like longer than all of my books combined right now and couldn't get anybody to read it. And I think around 2012, I discovered this Twitter thing. I discovered it pretty late. And I guess late is relative, but I was not like an early adopter. It had been out for 5 or 6 years by then. I thought, oh, I can put links on here and people will come back and read my blog. Well, they did not. And I quickly realized you can't just throw links out there. You got to write jokes. So I started writing, rather than these long blog posts, I started writing short jokes. And I wrote about what was in my life. And at that point, I had a mere 2 kids instead of 4. So I started writing things about my kids. And those were the jokes that that people really responded to. And that kind of helped me hone my craft. I've never done stand-up, never done anything like this, but Twitter gives you great feedback instantly for when your joke is good and spread it and they click the like button, and when it's not good and they just kind of universally shun it and you get that shame and you slink off the internet. So it gave me both ends of that, and I really kind of refined the process. I treated it like a job. I just grinded at it day after day. And then, yeah, Mike Spore with BuzzFeed, he ran an article on me. I'd got up to about 200,000 followers by then, and he ran an article on me where he shared 20 of my jokes, all of them linking back to my Twitter feed where I had 16,000 other jokes just like that. And that thing went viral. I just, overnight, it exploded. Within a month, I had an agent. And shortly thereafter that, I had my first book deal. And now I'm up to 1 million followers on Twitter. So it's kind of been a long road. Everybody always just sees the last little bit there where you kind of make it. But yeah, I've been at this for a while. And it's been fun all along the way. But it's also a ton of work to get to there.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a couple questions about that. Like my mom was really like just inherently funny, and I don't think I'm funny, but I think I'm very lighthearted and kind of jovial and, you know, have fun with it. And it was a direct hand-me-down, and we were a very sarcastic family as well. And it, you know, the whole smart ass thing kind of is going to the next generation in my house. But was your family funny? Were your brothers and sisters funny? Was there a parent that was funny, like just naturally around the house? And did you glom onto that? What was your joy in putting words to paper that you thought were funny? What was the impetus of that?
I think I do have a funny family, but we're probably not funny in a way that a lot of other people would find funny. We're pretty brutal to each other. There's some quick back and forth. But my dad has a very dry sense of humor. My sense of humor is probably most like him, but I just have less restraint than he does. So I actually go out and use it at times that are very inappropriate. And, you know, my siblings, especially the brothers who are closest to me, we always, you know, anytime you get together, conversations are mostly insults, and they're just hilarious. It's how guys show they like each other. I think there's something wrong with the way I just am as a person. So I write the way I think, and that just comes off really well on paper sometimes. I guess I just, and sometimes people will meet me at first and they'll think I'm quiet or reserved, and I'm really not at all. There's just a lot of things going behind the scenes that shouldn't necessarily be expressed. And then you get, you know, this online audience, or you get a chance to write a book. It's like, oh, let's lay this all down in text. And you're like, oh, I see why you don't say that some of the time.
Well,
so,
you know,
it gives people that.
Twitter's a unique beast too. And you've truly mastered it. I mean, like we do parent tweets of the week on our regular podcast, and you're always in there, right? Or you're right there, or I just find a train of thought. But it's definitely a craft how to twist words just the right way to get that punchline in that character limit. And, you know, it's really, it's a masterful thing. So congratulations on that domain. What was it like for you? So you wrote out of passion for the most part, like you didn't really see an ending, but you're like, I have all these thoughts in my head. I just want to get it down. And then hopefully it'll catch on. 'Cause you definitely grinded it out for many years.
Yes. And I think why I was able to make it, because some people, they kind of take these crazy moonshots. They're like, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to chase my dream and there's not going to be anything else. I'm going to quit everything else. I'm going to do this thing. And they do that thing and they can't pay the bills and they give up and they quit like 3 months in. Like, I it's not like I put my life on hold to do this. It's like, okay, I've got a job. I'm raising a family. I'm doing all of this, but I'm also writing. And the thing is, if I had never made a dime at writing, if it never peaked, if I still had 50 followers on Twitter, I would still be writing just like I am now. There'd just be nobody there to read it. You couldn't starve me out. And I wish more people would kind of treat their passions like that. Like, you know, passions are awesome, but your passion doesn't have to be all you do. It can be something you do in your free time because you love it and you develop it, you work at it, and that way there's no time limit on it. And I've got that now too. You know, the economy goes up and down, you get a pandemic, whatever happens, you know, the book industry is always in flux. And it's like, well, if everything falls apart and I never got a book deal again, would I keep writing? I think I would. This is genuinely what I like to do. And I hope more people out there kind of get that chance to find that thing they're passionate about where, yeah, it's great to make money, but if the money falls apart, you can kind of keep doing it just because it's what makes you happy.
Yeah, that's such an incredibly optimistic way to look at it, too. I mean, I write not nearly 1,000th of the level that you do, but I originally started, well, I write big concept-y things like a game show or, you know, I'll find something that intrigues me and I'll pitch it to my agent in L.A., and, you know, that kind of stuff. But I don't have the very honed craft that you do. But I did find it a way to also document the funny and the family for something when I'm gone. Like, that was my original, like, I'm going to just start blogging. I don't care I'm going to put some stuff on Medium. I don't care if anybody reads it, but hopefully it'll be there in a book or something for my kids someday to read, or they may never even look at it. Who knows? But do you find, not only the catharsisism of getting it out of your head, but are you enjoying the documentation of family life? Because I listened to some other podcasts with you, and you were saying that you're going to have four girls that are all going to be teenagers at the same time. Now they're not. So that's a funny level of life, but you're going to have material for a long time.
Yeah. It's kind of shocking going back, especially like YouTube. So my kids are completely unimpressed by my social media status, except on YouTube. And YouTube is where I'm by far the smallest. I've got it compared to every other platform I'm on. I'm nothing on YouTube at all, but that's the only one that matters to them. And that's the one where I make videos that feature them. And it's kind of crazy to go back and look at how small they used to be and these conversations we had. And we were just kind of having fun at the time and, you know, just putting out content. I was like, I don't know what to do with YouTube. We'll just talk, I guess. And you look back and you're like, oh, I was just grinding on social media, but now I've created this record of our family that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And I run into that with the tweets and the Instagram, the pictures, all of that. It's like, you know, if I wasn't doing this sort of thing, putting our family out there in this comedy context, yeah, I guess there wouldn't be that record there. So it's kind of been a fun side effect of that that we're very well documented, probably too well documented, but at least we're into it. I don't know if you how you are with printing pictures. We have pictures hanging up on our walls of our first two kids,
right,
and none of our third and fourth. We just stopped printing pictures. It's just such a burden to get out there. And every time I look up there and feel guilty about it, I'm like, yeah, but there's 10 million pictures of them online. It's okay. It balances out.
Yeah, we always joke our place would look like a kid Applebee's. You know, like if we put all the pictures up, it would be so insane like that. I mean, like you look at families like the Holderness family and Penn and those guys put out those brilliant parody videos with all their family members. And I think it's pretty fun. Do you ever find because we talk on our show about like real life situations. Like we take experts' advice a lot of times, and then we try to adapt it to our family because we're all kind of screwing up at fatherhood. But we're trying to figure it out. We're trying to make ourselves better. But I have a subconscious line of like where I'll go and where I won't go as far as telling the stories. How do you do that, and how do you monitor that as you put out your writings? And you know, I've heard you say it's kind of you have to realize it's comedy, right?
Yes, you have to kind of take a step back. So when you're writing comedy, you know, it's saying, so again, with these jokes and things, so, you know, a lot of them are completely true. A lot of them are inspired by, you know, this is the kind of thing that happened, but you can't fit the whole story in a tweet. So you condense it down and get the essence of it, kind of the greater universal truth. And you have to have that separation. So when I, you know, my kids and I were doing this stuff, it's like, they have to understand, it's kind of like a made for TV movie based on your life, based compared to the actual life. Like, you know, it's one step removed. Some artistic liberties have been taken. There's some protectiveness there. So there's certain things I want, you know, I want to portray my kids in a positive light. When we have a back and forth, they generally get the best of it on Twitter, even if that isn't necessarily quite how it played off in real life.
Right.
Because if you're always getting the best of your kids, it's not comedy. That's just you being a jerk to a small child. Like, that's totally yes. different. And, you know, I try to really safety is important in there too. There are some people who won't even show pictures of their kids. You know, I try to keep certain things vague enough that you can't go and like Google us and find like our home address, things like that you have to worry about. But yeah, and then the other thing is my kids, like my 6-year-old is obsessed with YouTube, but she just can't wait to get her own YouTube channel. And that's kind of one of the other things too, is with this, I'm the gatekeeper. So when something's not appropriate or I think something's unsafe, you know, I'm kind of this bulwark of it's not going to get through. I know the kind of things that are safe to put out there for other people to see.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen when the broadcasting. My 10-year-old just got her first phone recently, but she doesn't have any social media accounts to post. So as they get their own open channel, yeah, that'll be another discussion. But right now that's been probably the biggest blessing, is just that I'm kind of able to control the narrative rather than having the narrative written about us. Like, once you get to the point where you go so viral that like other people are researching your life and writing stories about you, that's when bad things happen.
They
dig up your past. They're like, did you know this about that person? Like, oh no. So hopefully I don't have any skeletons in my closet, but I'm sure if the whole internet came down on me, I'm sure they would find something. And that would be the last you heard of James Breakwell.
Well, I don't think there's going to be any skeletons from what I've read anyway. A nice Indiana boy. You know, James, you're so right, because like I work in pop culture for the most part. So I am on YouTube. I am on TikTok. I'm not on as an account, but I definitely watch culture trends, and I, you know, I'm pitching stuff all the time. And so it is kind of advantageous as a parent, because I kind of know those boundaries, parameters, what they're getting into, where they're going, what it can do, all that stuff. So there is kind of a blessing of doing what you do, you know, on the parental search. But it is funny, and I've heard you say this too. Like, my kids could care less if I just entertained a stadium or did a huge show in LA. They want to come home and talk about Mr. Beast on YouTube, or the latest slime creation, or Roblox invention, or a Minecraft world. Oh. Like, they don't care what we do.
And you know, you talked about, you know, like you're out there and kind of the creative capital of the world. But there's so much, like, we are in the golden age of television in terms of like the streaming services. You know, there's so much out there, so many original series for adults, for kids, for everybody, such high quality stuff, so many great actors and writers, great CGI, all this stuff. And all my kids want to watch are these crappy YouTube videos made by people in their bedrooms. It's like, seriously, we have 95 streaming services. You can watch a million hours of cartoons. I wouldn't even stop you, because screen time stops you from fighting, and you're going to watch this. Like,
It is bizarre what they get drawn to. And I, you know, I monitor it fairly closely. I give them a little leeway because I have the trust thing going on, but I do walk in and I'm like, what? She's playing a video game. Like, why are you watching someone else play a video game? What is that? Like, I just don't understand it. Well, you know, it kind of wraps back around to this question. I'm just curious, as your moment, right? Like, so the BuzzFeed article comes out and your numbers just go bananas over the course of the next 5 days, and the agents start calling. A lot of writers would dream for that scenario. What did that feel like for you? And was there just like a massive 5-day euphoria of like, holy crap, where do I go next?
You know, it's the thing I discovered with that, it's a lesson I learned earlier. You get, you know, minor successes, and you kind of set these benchmarks for yourself. Like, once I get there, I'm going to be satisfied. It's going to be enough. I don't have to worry about anything. And the thing you realize as you get into this is there's no such thing as like a walk-off home run. Mm-hmm. Like, you just do that, and it's all done, and that's it. You've hit the finish line. So it was exciting to go viral. And then as you're going viral, it's like, oh, there's projects that are popping up. There's things, and there's always something else you're doing. There's always something else you're going for. So I really thought, like, for years, my years in the wilderness in my blog, if I could just publish one book, that would be it.
Right.
I would be accomplished. I feel like I've done everything I can do. And let me tell you, I'm on book number 5 right now.
I know.
That feeling never really happens. You write it and you're like, okay, well, that book doesn't come out for a year. Now what am I going to do? You just keep going. So yes, there was joy. There was euphoria. There was excitement. But at the same time, it was just another day at work too. It was just another day of, I got to keep writing these jokes because people are coming in. I got to keep this going. So it's kind of surreal to have that happening, to, on the one hand, be achieving the greatest success of your life, and on the other hand, not changing anything at all and just doing everything you've been doing all along.
Yeah, it's true. It really is. And it's very invigorating to hear someone with such a passion, you know, for this particular craft. I mean, you did. You launched into what, 5 books, right? Like Only Dead on the Inside, Bare Minimum Parenting, How to Save Your Child, Prance Like No One's Watching, and then your new one. And you even have ventured creatively into Instagram, right? Also? With your cartoons?
What do you mean? Yeah, so I've got the cartoons out. I've been making those forever. Those are fun to do. You can kind of be a little bit more surreal with the comedy. And then I've got a sci-fi book is what I've been working
That's
on
right.
here
okay.
lately. That's going to come out next year. And that, I'm really excited about that one. So I've been writing all these jokes, you know, here's another finish line that didn't exist. Is I churned out comedy book after comedy book. I kept thinking, if I could just write a sci-fi book, then that would be my real finish line. And then I did it. The idea that had been bouncing around my head for forever, I got somebody to publish it. I was so excited. And for like 2 days, I was on cloud 9. And then I was like, okay, well, it's time to start the next one. And it just keeps going. So I finally reached the point in my life where, like, when something really great happens, it's like, okay, for the rest of the afternoon, I'm just going to fantasize about how great this is and just experience the moment. And then I'm just going to get back to work. That's kind of the compromise I've made for myself. Appreciate the moment, and then you just move on, because there's always going to be more stuff that needs to be done.
Yeah, it's so cool, though. Like, it's one of those creative endeavors that runs a through line. It's like, if you really just love the craft in general, then you're probably going to be able to figure out how to write a Western. You're probably going to be able to figure out how to write a sci-fi. So sci-fi is where you're going for a little bit. Have you ever thought about making the leap to Hollywood? Or is your agency, like, kind of pushing you, hey, why don't you pitch some ideas for a sitcom? Or why don't you try and be a joke writer for this? Or, you know, because I do know on Twitter specifically that, like, sometimes writers get plucked out for late night shows and things to that effect. Has that ever happened to you?
I've had some contacts over there. Never anything that developed too seriously. But yeah, I'm open to comedy writing on any platform, you know, Twitter, TV, wherever. I think most book writers, they always dream of having their books turned into movies. That's always like the $1 million paycheck floating around. It's like, maybe my book will be the next 50 Shades of Grey, you know, just much, much tamer for children, you know, like that. But yeah, it's funny. And I think for the longest time, the biggest separation was to be, and maybe I'm totally wrong about this, my impression was to, like, be a writer on a TV show up until like a few years ago. Like, you had to be, like, the writer's room was a very literal thing. Like, if you wanted to do this, you needed to be in LA with these other people. And we've got a great life here in Indiana. I love raising my kids here. And, like, we're never going to move out of here. So that just wasn't going to happen. I could, like, submit ideas from afar, but that would be it. And I don't know if that's still the case now that everybody's been working remotely for a year or two. If you're doing it from Zoom, I guess it doesn't matter if you're in Indiana or not. So maybe that's more of a possibility now, thanks to, you know, the worst possible thing that could happen. But yeah, definitely we're staying put here. We will not be relocating to LA to live the high flying lifestyle anytime soon.
Yeah. I love Indiana, and you raise a very good point. because I do believe technology has changed the way that that happens. Because, the, you know, the old path in Hollywood is you'd get on as an intern and then you'd work your way around a set. And then if you were a writer, you'd kind of hover around the writers. And then eventually, maybe two or three shows down the road, you may get picked up if one of the writers takes kind to you as a writer's assistant. And then you're in the writing room and you're just running mimeos and stuff like that all day. And then you may get a joke in, you may get a line in, and then it kind of keeps going. It's a grind on that front. But I do believe you. Like, we have a friend in common, most likely Tommy Riles, that just relocated to Nashville. And Tommy and I are in similar jobs. Obviously, he works for a well-known talk show. And he's just like, we're going to Nashville, and I'm going to be able to do this virtually. And I thought, wow, it really has changed. So who knows how it'll shake out for people like you. And, you know, I think that you're there. It just needs to be the right opportunity, right?
Yeah. I think it just comes down to, you know, being willing to take a chance to do different things. It's funny because it's always like, you've never done that before, but like, until you do something, you've never done it. It sounds weird, but I know when my agent first contacted me about writing a book, he's like, okay, you can write a short joke, but can you write a book? It's like, well, you know, then you go and you write a book. It's like, well, you did a book. Can you do a movie? Can you say, you see everybody, there's always this thing, well, you can't do that because you've never done it before, but there's a first time for everything. So I'm a big fan of saying yes to opportunities and taking risks and putting yourself out there, because you won't end up any worse off than what you started out. It's always better to take a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, James, one thing that I've watched a couple of your interviews and I really admire and thank you for is your continuance of optimism and comedy, even in, you know, pretty much the craziest times that I've ever lived through. And I've been around a couple decades, because we try to do that on our show a little bit. Like, we've had a show to tape on election night. We've had a show tape during the riots. We've had a show tape. But we're like, we're the place to go where you can take your mind off that and just kind of enjoy, you know, camaraderie, optimism, fatherhood stories, all that stuff. And you've spoken about this too. Is it harder to write when crazy stuff's happening out there? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on, no, I just keep the through line. And if it's your day to come see my stuff, that's great. And if it's not, take a couple days off and then come back. But I'm going to be here.
Yeah, and that's exactly my approach. I try to put out the good comedy, the good feelings every single day. Even on the worst day of your life, there's going to be, you know, it's not going to be 24 hours of terribleness. There are moments of levity. And I find that with my kids a lot, too. You know, if you read just my, you still there?
Yes.
Okay. So I heard the dog, thought maybe you were getting eaten or something. I was concerned.
We keep it real around here. We don't have pigs, but we have neighbors with dogs.
Oh, I gotcha. With kids, though, it's like, okay, it might have been the worst parenting day of your life. Your kids might have been just horrible for an 8-hour car ride or a 10-hour car ride. But I bet you there were a few moments in there of levity. And those are, you know, when I go and I tweet, that's what I seize onto, those funny moments of light. And I can put them out there and package them in a way that they relate to a lot of people. And so I try to be that, you know, kind of in the sense of the broader world, too. It's like there's always going to be something terrible going on. And some days those things are really, really terrible. Some days they seem all encompassing. It's almost like you can't see anything else. You don't even know how laughter can still exist, but it can. And, you know, you figure I've been writing these jokes every day since 2012, every single day. I haven't missed a single day. And in those 9 years, there have been a lot of days that were not necessarily such good days for me personally. And I still found that moment. There were a lot of days that were not good days for the world. But I still found those moments, and I'm going to keep finding those moments. That's kind of my mission now at this point, no matter how bad things get, to always find the moments, even if it's just a 2-second conversation. And that's kind of my contribution, because there's no shortage of people who can point out everything that's going wrong. I mean, that's like the world's most abundant resource, is people pointing out what's wrong. But I kind of like pointing out what's right, just to kind of offer a little balance to that.
I absolutely love that. I mean, I think it needs to be heard from every station, so to speak. You know, like, we can all go to the dark side, but it's better to stay on the sunny side. You know, and I'm not oblivious to what's happening in the world, and we do have conversations with our children, especially when it hits close to home. But also, you need to keep that bright light shining and that train track with the bright thing at the end. You know, so I think that's great. What do you see yourself doing, let's say, 5 years? What would be your dream scenario?
My dream scenario would be that I keep writing comedy books and I keep writing science fiction and other genres, too. I kind of branch out and keep it going. Every time I get a new book deal or I put out a book, I kind of feel like I stole something. Like, somebody's like, you've gone one book too far. We have to put a stop to this. This is illegal. And every time I make it to the next one, there's a little sigh of relief. So I just hope I can keep that going. It's been so much fun writing these books and sharing that content out there. And it's even fun promoting them. And every time a book comes out, I finally have an excuse to go on these podcasts and meet with people. But, you know, I've seen them, they're like you. I've seen people floating around the sphere, but we haven't necessarily had a chance to connect. So it really makes me come out of my shell sometimes and do those fun things. So I really hope that the next few years bring more of the same. I hope my kids continue to, you know, grow up and everything goes okay there. You know, if something goes catastrophically wrong with my children in real life, not only would that be terrible, that really messed up my comedy career too. It's like, oh yeah, like Errol, who wrote all those parenting books? Do you see his kids exploded? Like, wait, no. So I hope they keep continuing to growing up happy and healthy. We keep the family life going. We keep the writing life going and everything just stays on course. That would be my biggest hope.
I love that. Let me go Oprah on you. So, James, what's a family dinner like at your house?
Oh, our family dinner would be a disappointment to a whole lot of people who are very traditional. So, first of all, we have all of our chairs arranged on one side of the table, like you're looking at that painting of the Last Supper, because we're watching the TV. Because, I don't really watch much TV at all, but the one time we watch it is at dinner, because it keeps the kids calm and focused. And more importantly, you can't hear people chew. It's like, oh, we have so many so small mouths, and that sound of chewing. It's like, if we don't have that going, it drives me nuts. So we turn on some comedy. We went through the entire Star Trek series as a family, just watching it at dinner. We're currently watching Young Sheldon. Love that show.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I'm trying to cook some more healthy foods for the kids. I'm trying to trick them into eating things without sugar. Some days it goes really well. Some days the experiment is just a disaster and they won't touch the food. I just learned to make snow cones the other day. So now it's a race to get through the food and watch the episode of TV so they can have unlimited snow cones. So that would be what a typical family dinner looks like for us right now.
Did you buy a snow cone machine or are you literally shaving ice in your kitchen?
I got like a super overpowered blender that just destroys ice. It is so loud, but man, the kids love it. It just, I think if that destructive aspect wasn't there, it wouldn't appeal to them nearly as much. So they hear something get destroyed and they dump some sugar-free syrup on it and it makes a big mess if they spill it and they can't get enough of it.
I love it, man. I mean, that's what family life is all about. It's figuring it out, staying optimistic and taking the good, bad, and the ugly and just keep moving forward, you know? Well, speaking of that, let's move on to your latest project, How to Be a Man, Whatever That Means, Lessons in Modern Masculinity from a Questionable Source. Can you just really briefly, James, because I do want to honor your time, can you take us through the progression? I love Bare Minimum Parenting, by the way. It's one of my favorites. Take us through the quick 4-book progression and then get us to this book where you've actually spoken that, you know, you're a little more vulnerable and you tell some more real stories in this one.
Yes. Yeah, so my first book was Only Dead on the Inside, A Parent's Guide to Surviving the Zombie Apocalypse. It was my first crack at book writing. I just wanted to write a book that was, you know, I didn't want to write a regular parenting guide. So I thought, oh, let's just put that parenting guide in the zombie apocalypse. And that was a blast to write. It turns out raising your kids at the end of the world is not that different than raising them normally. And then the second one I was kind of the opposite of that book by the Tiger Mom, who talked about how, you know, you go overboard and do everything you possibly can to give your kids an advantage. So Bare Minimum Parenting, The Ultimate Guide to Not Quite Ruin Your Child, it started out as a joke. I thought, what's the least you could possibly do to still turn out a functional human being? And as I wrote it, it was fun to write. There are so many jokes and stuff in there, but I accidentally proved the real point, and that was that sometimes by doing less, your kids actually turn out better. You know, they get a chance to develop on their own and have fun and make mistakes and do all that.
Amen, amen.
And so I was talking about my most meaningful book. And then after that, I kind of went back to the Only Dead on the Inside style. I wrote How to Save Your Child from Ostrich Attacks, Accidental Time Travel, and Anything Else That Might Happen on an Average Tuesday. And that kind of took the parenting in the zombie apocalypse scenario and just stretch it out to what happens if you're attacked by dinosaurs or get thrown back in time, or what if, you know, aliens abduct your child, all these kind of, you know, crazy scenarios. And I thought, okay, what would a parent actually do in this situation? So that was thrilling to write as well.
Love that one as well. Loved it.
You're really boosting my ego here. I love it. And then the fourth one was a book for kids. So I write, I go through all these steps to kind of be inspired by my family to write these books and to write these tweets. And this was kind of turning that in its head and saying, okay, let's give these writing prompts to kids to kind of help them find the humor and positivity and creativity in their own lives and go through that with some exercises. So that came out then right at the start of the pandemic. Actually, like, I was going to have like the biggest book tour of my career for that book. And it was like a few days before they shut down the world. Like, okay, nobody's traveling anywhere. And we remember at the time we're like, okay, well, this will last for a couple of weeks and I'll get back out there, you know, flash forward a year later. So that was a learning experience as well. But that will always be linked in my mind with the start of the pandemic. And then this is the one where I kind of get more personal and a little bit more vulnerable. How to be a man, whatever that means, lessons in modern masculinity from a questionable source. So all my other books, I kind of took a step back and looked at parenting in general, but there weren't necessarily that many more personal stories. And then on Twitter, you get in my newsletter, you get the more personal stories, but they're very much in the moment. What happened this week? What happened today? And with this book, I took a step back and said, okay, what about all the stories from pre-social media? All the stuff from my own life I've built up to get to this point here. So I took my best, funniest stories and put them in this book and kind of looked at what did each of these things teach me about how to be a man? What did I learn, or what should I have learned that I definitely did not learn to get me into this current mess? And so there's just the stories that you save up that you only tell at a party after several drinks, like all of those stories are in there.
Yes.
It was great to put those down. It was great to connect with people who are in those stories, to fact check them, or I should probably put fact check in, you know, quotation marks, because everybody has different versions of what happened.
Right.
And there's some personal stuff as well. There's a chapter in there that I've had a lot of people say made them cry. And I was really nervous about putting that in there. But it's in there because it's just kind of, if it's going to be the book about how to be a man, I put all the experiences in there. I put the good, the funny ones in there. I put the more poignant ones in there as well. So hopefully people kind of appreciate that juxtaposition. And that'll be out then June 1st at a retailer near you.
That is so great. And, you know, I did catch the funny story of how you ran it by your agent first to see if it would catch.
Yeah.
And then after they greenlit it, you were like, hey, honey, do you think this could be cool? So.
Yes. Oh, man, I was so nervous. Yeah, and that was going to be such a hard conversation to have with my wife about this one particular chapter that I wanted to make sure that my editor, like, if my editor thought it doesn't fit in the book, I'm like, well, but I don't even need to have that conversation with my wife. I can just cut it. My editor's like, let's leave it in. I was like, well, guess I'm having that conversation now. And it actually, I've been very, very lucky through all of this. My wife has been very supportive. People ask me about that all the time. Well, how does she feel about, you know, putting all this out about your family? Mm-hmm. And again, she understands that just a little bit of separation between real life and Twitter and real life and the newsletter. And this one, in this book, I guess that separation comes down. We move one step closer and that separation's gone. This is really what happened. This is the full story. And she was okay with putting that out there. So this book is really thanks to her.
I love that. And just in a very similar vein, my wife produces, she produces for a living, but she produces our podcast. So I'll get called to the studio every once in a while. She's like, hey, you were talking about division of chores around the house. You want to talk about this dishwasher thing that you said you did, but didn't really? So at least our wives can check us in reality and be that barometer, you know, like,
yeah,
let's check definitely. The egos and pull it back. Well, James, I've really enjoyed our conversation. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Lessons in Modern Masculinity from a Questionable Source. Top line, How to Be a Man, whatever that means. It comes out June 1st, but you can pre-order Main Street Books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, IndieBound, Indigo Canada. All you have to do is go to explodingunicorn.com or follow James on Twitter. Follow those links into the inside. James, thank you so much. I hope you'll come on the show again when you have something else great to talk about.
I would love nothing more. Thank you so much for having me today.
All right. Cheers to the family. Cheers to the wife. And congratulations on your new book. I'm very excited. Thank you, James.
Thanks for listening to the Dad Time Out Show. We're out of here. We've been listening to you talk for an hour.
My turn! Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to our Time Out Show. And we're out of here. We'll be right back.